shy little Uber, liver, liver, leave us.
Good evening and welcome to As the Worm Turns. You are tuned in to KBNF's live call-in gardening show. I'm your host, Jill Spears, here tonight with, of course, my favorite gardening worms. It's Lance and Lulu in the house. Good evening.
Good evening out there.
Hi, everybody.
Glad to be here. You always remind me it's Tuesday when you show up.
I know, right?
Right. And very pleased to have a special guest tonight, Bill McDorman from the Rocky Mountain Seed Alliance here with us. Thank you, Bill, for joining us.
Good evening. It's an honor to be here.
Bill drove up from Arizona today because he is attending the Seed to Seed workshop or class, which is on the first Wednesday of the month, being tomorrow. Lance, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And great to have you here for the show and for that class. Everybody that's going to be in that class is lucky. It's focusing on grains tomorrow.
Yeah, it's one of those things that people don't think you can grow in your garden. And 200 square feet, 250 square feet, you can get a lot of grain.
A lot of grain.
Not small grains. Corn's a little different, but still, you can get a lot of grain.
Uh-huh. And you do that every year?
Every year.
Mm-hmm. It depends on the grain, but we've got estimates that you can get up to 7 loaves of bread off 100 square feet, depending on the grain and your yard and what you're – and that was done in Colorado Springs.
Okay, there you go. That's taking it right from seed to table.
Yeah. Well, that's what it's about. There should be.
Yeah.
Right. So we'll talk a little bit more about that and want to encourage everybody, if you haven't heard about the Seed to Seed program, I think you can still get information on that at learningcouncil.org.
Mm-hmm.
Happening tomorrow, starting out at the research station. You're going to be going over grains. You're going to be planting some stuff, and you're going out in the afternoon to visit Mike Chamness, who was a guest here on the show.
And Fruitland Mesa.
Fruitland Mesa, right, and grows grains in a very nice, simple way. And maybe we could just stop and talk about that for a minute, Bill, because...
Well, there's a real revolution going on, and a lot of it was driven originally and still is by people who are having gut problems. And through trial and error and other things, thousands of people are learning that once they heal their guts, and there seems to be a new regimen coming around that, the gluten-free for a while, you can see how big that section is in the stores, that they can reintroduce grains back into their diets if they go to older, heritage and ancient grains, that they have a different chromosomal structure and go back to old sourdough techniques.
Right.
Back when, nobody had gut problems like this. Mm-hmm. There was something worked for about 10,000 years.
Right. Yeah.
So we're going back and finding those grains, and they're beautiful, and they don't need many inputs, and they can be used in flower arrangements, and you can grow them on small scales. And I think that's why this movement is starting to gain favor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a really good point. The gut factor of it. Yeah. And the amount of grain that you can grow. And Lance, you do this, like the einkorn. That's one of the ancient grains.
I got the turkey red wheat, which is...
Turkey red wheat.
I would say, 2,000-3,000 years old?
It comes from it got to America through the Ukrainians. Yeah.
So it's been around.
Yeah. It was brought by immigrants. A great story about that, the Canadian Wheat Board. A Ukrainian immigrant in Canada came down, heard that there were other Mennonites who had brought good grain from his country. That's where the steppes of Russia especially, and that area where some really great grains came from. And he came down to the U.S., and he was a wheat chewer. He could chew ripe wheat and tell you if it was going to be good enough. He found some he really liked. He chewed it. So he bought a whole train car load. He had authorization. They took it up to Canada in 1902. And in 1908, 6 years later, there were 3 million bushels of it being grown in Canada, all from the seed in that one. So, that's what happens. People say, you guys are dealing with such small amounts of things, and it's not going to – we find the one that really works for us, it scales up fast.
You're an example of that.
Yeah, you take one grain, a seed, and you're going to get over 100 grains from that one seed from planting it and harvesting it.
Right. The yield is big.
Yeah.
Wow.
We send out 5-gram packets, and you can get a pound. And then that next pound, you can get maybe 50 to 100 pounds wow. the next year, and then you're on your way.
It just starts, multiplying.
Hugely abundant system.
Yeah, yeah, abundance. I like
right,
that.
Right, and that's, oh, thank God.
Isn't that good
right?
news?
Right?
No, it really is. No, it's
you know,
happy news.
I mean, after you hear all, you know, there's been so much negativity in the past 10, 20 years, and the whole thing, like you guys are saying, you know, the fanaticism over, oh, I can't eat gluten and oh, I can't eat. Well, why?
Yeah.
You know, it's because months.
Right. Let's look at why and get back to it. And that's what you mentioned.
Right.
Yeah.
It's because of all the dinking around and artificial stuff that's been done to this. You know, grain was the reason Anthony was over there hanging with Cleopatra. I mean, let's get real.
Well, I had a young farm manager when I was the director at Native Seed Search, and he came up to me one time and he goes, Bill, you know, all these vegetables are really great. And we've got the local food and the farmers markets and it's all coming around. He goes, that's just icing on the cake. We need the cake. And so, research, it's 70% of what we eat. We may think we have a local food movement, but until we have grains local, then it's not a local food movement. We're just growing the icing on the cake.
See, I'm totally good with that. I mean, you know, you can eat all the vegetables you want, but if you don't have some nice pasta or, you know, good, nice sourdough bread with a little butter on it, who are you kidding?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
It's an empty meal.
Why should we cut that out?
Yeah. Well, the other thing about grains is you don't need all this big equipment. The soil does not have to be – in fact, really fertile soil is not what they want because they get too tall and they lodge and fall on the ground. Lodging is when it falls over. And you can harvest it with a sickle or – You can, if it's small enough, you can do it with your hand pruners, one handful at a time.
Right.
And you can thresh it with your feet.
And you've developed a lot of techniques like
screens and winnowing on a windy day. You know, it's not that high tech.
Right.
In fact, it isn't.
It's not high tech. Well, no. It is low tech.
It's not high tech at all.
And then if you make your own compost, essential ingredient, that straw.
I think,
wasn't it John Jevons said you need 7 times the space that you're growing your food in to grow the straw you need for your own compost in a really good, fertile system. So here, grains can be naturally integrated into your system to help you become more self-reliant.
Right.
What I've noticed growing grains is after I harvest, and, you know, this is dry stalks and the stubble's still there, that's the softest, easiest ground to till.
Yeah.
It's not a cover crop. Roots have just... Yep. Work that soil that it's actually very easy to till and come in.
You know, it's really easy to get. Once we get some of the, you know, we've started with so many just small amounts of grains. That's all we can find for some of these older grains, the emmers and the einkorns and things. And some of the heritage grains that came like the turkey red. The USDA collection has those and they'll send you small samples, but they're only 5 grams. You only get a little bit, so you have to start on a really, really small scale. And so, you know, we learned early on that you can't send 5 grams to a big farmer who wants to grow grains. You know, Brett Stevenson, one of our growers, said, oh, I'm so sorry. My tractor went one row over, and I rolled over all 20 the 5-gram quantities. You know, I'm so sorry, you know. So we've put together a network of 103 gardeners and farmers, and anybody out there listening is welcome to be part of that. And help us start with these small amounts and gear them up. And once you get to 100 pounds, then farmers know what to do with it, and they start rolling.
So I mentioned earlier with these guys that I took some, Leanne sent me some, and I 100 grains, one at a time, every 4 inches.
Oh, God, that's right.
Yeah, she just sort of rolled her eyes, and it's like, well, that's
what it takes.
Leanne Hill is director of our program, and so she's got experience now over 3 years helping people all over the Mountain West get things that will start to work for them. And then, as I said, farmers like to get into this because of the crop rotation. It immediately fits into their soil, making their soil better in between other crops. And so this is really going to be fun.
So exciting. And let's talk a little bit about your organization, but I do want to give the phone numbers because you can call in and talk to Bill right here tonight on our show. We are live, and it's 970-527-4868, 1-866-KVNF. Now you can email us, worm@kvnf.org. So that is one of the main goals of the Rocky Mountain Seed Alliance, is to set up these networks to get people involved in seed saving and get this supply and sustainability. And
our goal is simple: seeds for the Rocky Mountains from the Rocky Mountains.
Just make sense
biologically. In a time when people all over the world are shortening their supply lines and paying attention, and now that we have to face more dramatic climatic changes, the only way to do that is to save the seeds from the things that are working right where you are. Yeah. So that's what we're working toward. And grains, since it's 70% of our food, have become one of our programs. And so as an organization, what we do is inspire people to get back involved in this. You only have to go back two generations, and everybody did this. Yeah. Every farmer and gardener saved their own seeds wherever they were. We're not that far out.
Wow.
And so we're trying to re-inspire people to do that. We just teach seed schools constantly. Or like we had, I think, four teacher trainings now where we teach train the trainers so they can go out and start seed schools. And Don LaRue came to one of our teacher trainings, and I mean, these guys are already so qualified to teach what they're teaching, but it gives them a space to practice and to see what other people and put them into a network. And so we're trying to build it that way. And then, as you said, we network. We've got some really great directories on our website where you can find a map with seed teachers, seed libraries, seed businesses, and seed stewards, people that have dedicated to saving the seeds from one thing. And you can see where they are on the map, click on them, and all their information comes up, and you can connect with them directly. And so we don't even know how much the network's growing now, and it is. It's just tremendous.
Yeah, the movement is just really taking foot, and it's exciting. And your webpage, I believe, is rockymountainseeds.org?
Rockymountainseeds.org, yes. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I can't wait.
Oh, there's so much information there. And only takes you a couple minutes of rattling around. You are inspired.
Well, I'll have to come to somebody's house.
I'm just for the record, I'm going in Lance's direction. I go home and I try to spend as much time as I can off the computer, although it's not that much yet. But I think you've got the role model here in the Valley.
Right.
Just do what he does.
Yeah, but some of us have to be his secretary.
No, I don't need a secretary. It's so simple.
Yeah. But you do have a good team at the Sea Alliance, Bill. And can you talk a little bit about all that support? And you guys just are a good fit.
Bellstar's got to be one of the best event planners and organizers I've ever seen. Leanne Hill, master's in eco-agriculture from Prescott College. Again, outstanding river rafter and, organizer and seed saver. She lives in Mancos, Colorado.
Oh, sure.
And we've got John Kasha, who is 25 years been growing and saving his own garlic, was one of the founders. He's in southern Idaho. We have a little project going down there where we're trying to increase up to farmer quality or quantities, some of the our successful grains. We've got about 20 now that we know have worked in a lot of places that show real promise for farmers. And so we're trying to grow those out on a larger scale at the Snake River Earth Arts Institute in southern Idaho, and that's where John is. And aren't we lucky we've got software now? We do our staff meetings online with Zoom,
right in the
and
field.
We're in four different states, and it doesn't matter, And we try to get together, We have our conferences every other year, and we try to get together. And our last real board meeting we did all together with staff was a raft trip on the Salmon River.
Oh, nice.
Isn't this how life should be?
Yes, it is.
Stressed and
grain trials you mentioned, and I think it was maybe Mike Chamness or Frank Stoniker who was talking about grain trials going on at different research stations.
Mm-hmm.
And so is this the same thing, or tell me a little bit about that, or tell us about that?
Well, you can tell me what Mike.
Well,
was that the one seed every 4 inches?
That's a trial, yes. That's Arabian Blue, is that one?
Yeah.
And,
okay.
Burbank?
Could be, yeah.
Those are the two. And then she gave me a rye, but I didn't have rye's a winter planted in the fall, so I didn't plant that.
That's Monk Bergen's Rebel Rye.
Yeah.
Grow the Rebel Rye, brother.
Yeah. But the grain trials are generally not at the research stations unless it's at people doing it and stuff.
And would this be, you have a stewardship program.
Right.
Is this kind of the same thing?
Yeah. Well, we have we call it the Rocky Mountain Heritage Grain Trials Program. And it used to be at the extension, and at the experiment stations. I mean, that's why they were set up originally. The land grant colleges, so you could have a science center in every state. And then you would have experiment stations where they could actually grow out and try things and give the seeds to local people once they increased them. I mean, our whole system was so elegant. And then it all was privatized. And our state governments and federal, through this funding, hardly do any of it at all this way now. And so we're doing it grassroots. We don't think anybody's coming to help, and there's no funding. So let's roll up our sleeves, citizen science. Let's do it.
Yeah.
We've got off-the-shelf software that was developed from the Howard Dean campaign. That allows us to network everybody. You know, it's open source, and we're rocking it. And so, as I said, we have 103 people that have signed up. You can go to our website, sign up for the Heritage Grain Trials Program. Leanne will get in touch with you immediately. We have 285 different heritage and ancient grains now that we've found that we need help growing out. And don't be intimidated. First year, all we ask you is three questions. Did it work? Can you send us any seeds back if it did? And would you grow it again? And if those things are positives, then the second year we ask you to keep a little more data and help us increase the seed anymore.
Nice.
And by third year, you can be, you know, you're looking at falling numbers and protein levels. You know, that's our next level.
Yeah. So.
Interesting.
Wow.
Yeah, the research station here has always been studying the tree crops.
Right, and that's appropriate.
Because that's what the
main...
Sure.
And he's going to switch it to grapes, the wine grapes, and table grape stuff. That's as part of
who
it.
Who is Frankis?
Frankis.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and we're also one of the only organic, all organic.
Mm-hmm.
You
might be the only.
I think it's the only one. There's places he said that have plots that are organic, but this is all
right, all organic. Yeah, it was pretty special. And let me just give those phone numbers again, 527-4868-1866, KVNF now. Bill, you mentioned that the seed class that's happening tomorrow is pretty darn special in itself.
You know, we've done over 50 what we call seed schools. We started with six-day programs, and we still do those. We're going to do another one in Denver in October if anybody's interested. And a lot of them have been single day events. And so I've seen a lot of seed schools. And out of those, some of our teachers, as I mentioned before, are doing other programs. Dawn Tipping's doing a program, Rowan White, her seed Seva. But what you have here are two of the most astoundingly competent teachers I've run across in the Mountain West. As I said, these guys are my heroes. They're so experienced. And such great communicators, I think, as you've heard over the years on this program, I have evidence of that. And they're doing it differently. They're spreading it out over, you know, months. And so it's once a month. So you can see on the ground, you could actually in what is it, 6 months? Is that
nine months
program?
Yeah.
You could go from 0 to 60 in this and with world class education. And make no mistake, it is world class. What you're learning here about what's going on in this valley, nobody else is doing on this level. And so I'm really excited to see this kind of program. It's right along our mission. Mm-hmm. You do this a couple of years down the road and people, your students, and pretty soon all the seeds from this valley will come from.
Yeah.
And as they should. And that's, yes.
Right.
You know, we won't have to be involved anymore.
Yeah.
Well, all of our libraries have a seed library.
Yes.
And it started just with the Hotchkiss Library. And now all of the libraries have seed packets.
Yeah. And thanks to Sarah Smith. I hope she's listening tonight because that's part of...
I think she's done your program.
Yeah.
Oh, right. She will definitely be part of that.
Yeah.
She's part of what's gotten me so excited about seed saving and just bringing people together and the whole seed exchange and people sharing their stories about seed, too.
Well, without the stories, we don't know how to save the seeds. They're just as important, and they're equal, in fact. And so, and if there's somebody young out there listening that's looking for something to do with their lives, if you want to be a real hero, do that. Get seed libraries and seed exchanges started wherever you are. If there's a library in your town already, go down and help with this, because you could make a real difference. I mean, in 1,000 years, and we teach this in seed school, people could look back. You know, we lost over 90% of the diversity in the crops that are planted in this valley. It might even be more than that. Mm-hmm. And so, and that's not enough to make it. You know, as the farmers in the Midwest are finding out, a few years ago they lost up to 40% right. of the corn crop because it was too hot and dry. Now they're going to lose 80% because it's flooded. Yeah, it's right? Flooded. So, but you go back to the Native Americans that were growing corn there, and they had flood-tolerant and heat-tolerant varieties.
Right.
There was way more diversity, and that's what we need to get back to. Sure, it'll never be as productive per acre.
Right.
We're giving up right. yield, but let it go. There's enough of us right. and enough land to feed ourselves mm-hmm. with enough diversity. I really believe that. And in 1,000 years, when people look back at this era, the early 21st century, and they go, whoa, you guys, I don't know what you were thinking for two generations. You lost it all. We almost went down totally. And a few yeah. of you woke up and started saving seeds again. Wow, that's the only reason we're really here now.
Yeah.
Here's a toast to you people. And that's what you could do if you were young and wanted to be a hero now. That's why these courses are so important. And leaders and heroes like Lance and Don and Lulu are so important to what's going on in the community. I think this is the most important thing we could all be doing.
Yeah, great. Thank you. That is so inspiring. You can ask a question if you want to call in, because I know everybody's listening. 970-527-4868, 1-866 KVNF now. And we have Bill McDorman from the Rocky Mountain Seed Alliance with us this evening. One of the things we always talk about on this show, Bill, is just go out there and try it. Just get out in your garden. And you have a similar message about saving seed.
Yes. Make all the mistakes you can.
Oh, amen. There it is right there. You're going to learn a lot more from your mistakes than you will from your success.
Right.
Okay, when you screw it up big time, that's when you go, oh.
Oh.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, wait.
That's when we
I
learn.
Get it.
Or if you kill everything except for one plant that happened to have the genetics to make it through that disease or the heat or whatever
or
it is.
Or whatever it was.
That's what you're looking for. So in a sense, sure. disasters and mistakes, now that we're seed savers, become our most important
mm-hmm. right.
advantage. Mm-hmm. And so, mm-hmm. yeah, it just changes your whole attitude as a gardener.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, super exciting.
And then one more thing. Dr. Carol Depe taught genetics at Harvard University for 25 years. And then came home to Oregon. She went to Corvallis, Oregon. She's a gardener and wrote a book called How to Breed Your Own Backyard Garden Vegetables. So here's the scientist coming home, teaching the same thing. It's not only easy to save seeds, it's easy to breed
sure.
your own adapted backyard garden vegetables. So she posed a question. What's the worst thing that can happen in your garden if you make a mistake genetically? Right, you don't understand the genetics of inbreeding depression. We're taught to breed true. We've got to save this or that or isolate or hand pollinate. All those things come in, you know, the first thing that seed savers are afraid of. These are the myths. So she said, what's the worst thing that can happen? You still get to eat. You're still gardening. This is all fluff on the – this is all up side. And you may see something like she did a purple potted snap pea in your backyard that nobody's ever seen before and save those seeds and change the world. And so, you know, that's the opportunity we have is to further right. this 10,000-year-old ritual that really gave us all the food that we have. If you think about it, and even Dr. Bill Tracy, who teaches at University of Wisconsin-Madison, says this, that, you know, 9,850 years of plant breeding, you know, well, the traditional way, just saving seeds from whatever worked for you, without knowing any genetics, no Mendel, nobody had any idea
right.
what they were doing
right.
for 9,850 years. It took everything from wild plants to all of the crops that we know about today, teosinte to corn, chiltepines to chilies. You can't eat the wild stuff. we have these people to thank, right? So while it may not be up to snuff as far as genetically modifying and getting a product to market now in a few years, it was hugely effective.
Sure.
And that's all we're trying to do with our system is say, hey, you know, I'm not, I try never to be negative about anything going on around seeds or anybody anywhere. I'm a little bit different. I don't go to try to fight the world's largest chemical corporations. I don't think we have the energy for that, you know, but we can go back to a tried and true system that's been around for 10,000 years that we don't need any money for,
right?
That's grassroots, that creates self-reliance in each region because you guys will have stuff and know how to grow it here that nobody else in the world will ever can ever know.
Yeah.
I won't even know that where I am in Arizona, and that's the way it should be.
Yeah. Mm. And there we build the momentum and energy that we need.
And your own stories then.
Your own stories, exactly.
I can't wait to get some of that famous old carrot that's grown in the early 21st century. Lance's carrots? Is that what, wasn't that what they were called?
Right. Yeah, we need to start some storytelling around that for sure. Hey, we have Jane on the line from Paonia with a question. Good evening, Jane.
Hi. The question I have is, I noticed you did not mention spelt or kamut. Those are two flowers I like to use. Just made a tea sauce last night with spelt flour. But they're very, I think they're old wheat varieties. Do you consider them of any value?
Jane, I have both spelt and kamut planted this year. The spelt's about 2.5-3 feet tall, just ready to head out, and the kamut still's got 3 weeks out.
Yeah.
So I'll let you try some. I'll bring you some.
Okay. I'd love that.
All right.
And then the other thing about seed saving, this year I've always bought seeds. I'm not able, I mean, saving seeds is pretty hard in terms of labor, and I don't do labor really good. But the cost of seeds is exorbitant right now. I spent $72. I couldn't believe it when I added it up on little seeds for my vegetable garden. And I'm not going to do that anymore. That was terrible. So money is involved here, too.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you, Jane. Appreciate that.
All right, thanks for the call.
Bye.
Bye. That's a good point, the money involved, and if we're all just community and sharing and networking, which is a big...
Well, think about how many dollars leave a community.
Right.
You know, a friend of mine is a market farmer growing lettuce, and we did a seed school tour, and one of his lettuce plants was going to seed. And it's like, oh, I'm a market farmer, and it's gone. You know, I missed it, right? It's no longer a crop for me. And I said, well, so how much do you get for that head of lettuce? And he goes, oh, about $4 at the farmer's market, maybe $5, you know, if I get it just right. And I said, so, and how long is it good? How long in the field or whatever? And he goes, you know, 3 days unless I get it into ice water and then I can, you know, stretch it out. I said, do you realize that one that you just lost will produce about $50 worth of lettuce seed? One plant at retail. Those seeds you could store for decades if you keep them cool, dark, and dry. And you can put them into envelopes and ship them all over the world. You know, and so what is a better product? I think once we start to integrate seed saving back into our market farming, we're going to start going, oh, that's why we're working so hard. It's not that it takes more labor. It's where the real value is. And I would invite Jane just to pick one thing.
Exactly.
And get excited about it.
That was exactly what I was going to say. You don't have to be a multi-acre gardener. I was telling you guys when we came in, I have arugula seeds that since the first time I ever grew arugula, I have never bought another seed.
Right.
You know, so it doesn't, you know, if you even just have one thing.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's it.
And at a seed exchange, you can trade that for everything else you need.
Exactly.
Or the seed libraries we talked about.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And why that's so important is that every time you grow something where it is, and there's more and more evidence that we're talking about. It was always there. It's even in the genetic engineering books. They talk about how nature inexplicably still changes things in the field and the genetics. There's forces working on teasing out selections and combinations of alleles, you know, that breeders don't even know about, that we've never sequenced. It's just what's always happened.
Sure.
It's adapting and coming home to where it is. Right. So every time you buy seeds, you're bringing in something from somewhere else. You're starting over. What we need is to keep that momentum going, not just for a year to 2 years, for how many years for your arugula?
Oh, 30, 40.
You know? So what happens if it's 300 years?
Right.
And it starts to change with our weather as it changes.
Yeah.
That's the true self-reliance that we're looking for. So then somebody comes and says, oh, no, I'm going to bring in an arugula from Florida or from Maine.
Right.
You have no idea if it's going to do as well as the stuff you have.
Right. Thank you, Bill. We're going to take a quick question from Amber Kay, and you are listening to As the Worm Turns on KVNF 90.9, Peonia, KVMT 89.1, Montrose. Good evening, Amber.
Good evening. I know we're in overtime, but I just wanted to ask a question since I'm all jazzed about seed saving.
Right.
From your conversation, thank you. How much land do you need to be of help to the cause?
You don't need land. We, you know,
I need to grow out crops and be of help to plant this crop and give feedback.
Well, the more, the better. So, you know, whatever you can find. What did they find out? That there's 4,000 acres of growable land in the city of San Francisco, in the alleys and underneath power lines or what. I mean, there's land all over. So, you know, we can look for public resources. That's one point. But, you know, we have varieties of grains that are so rare, we only have 50 seeds. And so if we send you 5 seeds of einkorn and you put them into pots, like every 4 inches, put them into pots on the deck of your trailer and grew them up, each one of those becomes, 100 seeds?
100 seeds.
and send us those back, you are helping us tremendously. You may be changing the agriculture of the Rocky Mountain West back just in time by doing that. So there's no scale. As I said before, pick one thing, get really excited about it, start small. And I think what you'll find is what most of the rest of us have, is that then if the real problem isn't, you know, I'm too small, I don't have enough land or whatever, it's that you become obsessed.
And
your friends are going, oh my God, what happened to her? She's like, she's growing this stuff everywhere, you know? That's what happens.
I wanted to say one thing.
That is what happens.
When I grow a crop of seeds, like carrots, that's enough seed for 10 years.
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't have
amazing.
To grow that. Yeah, I have carrot seed. I think I mentioned had the Scarlet Keeper.
Yes.
17 years old, still sprouting.
That was one of my favorite varieties for 25 years. Largely disappeared from the commercial catalogs. It's a great, great carrot.
Well, thank you, Lance, for growing that.
Yeah.
Thank you, Amber.
Thanks.
All right. So, Bill, so great to have you here. I think we could talk all night, probably.
Yeah.
Well, once a month I do an online podcast through the Urban Farm.
Okay.
Podcast, so you can find that with Greg Peterson. So, and you can do in questions for that too. So there's follow up with that. Come to one of our seed schools if you're really interested. If you want to change the world, come to our seed school teacher trainings. We'll be at the Posner Center in Denver in October, and we'll be doing that again. And you can find all this on the website. And then we're doing a grain school in Albuquerque at the end of July with the Museum of New Mexico.
Oh,
and we've
wow.
got grains in the field now. We'll be harvesting, we'll be baking, we'll be, you know, it's going to be
amazing.
Yeah.
It's yeah.
on and on and on.
Right. So Bill McDormand from the Rocky Mountain Seed Alliance website is rockymountainseeds.org. Just a wealth of information there. And thank you so much for being here tonight and tomorrow with the Seed to Seed program, Lance and Don, putting on at the research station, and thank you for inspiring us to change the world.
This.
Absolutely.
Thank you guys for being
thank
here.
You
what
so
you're
much.
Doing is important. Thank
All right,
you.
Thanks.
All right. It's Skippy coming up with One Man's Perspective.
It's just we're allowing them in, and that's fabulous.
All right. Thanks
for
listening to As the Worm Turns. Caving up.
Good night, everybody.
Oh, little girl.